Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's interview, how to double or triple the number of high-quality clients in your IT services business. I'm Bill Metcalf, your host. Now, the person I'm about to interview may be somebody you've already heard of because she is considered to be the top expert on sales, marketing, and lead generation for IT services companies, and she has become a household name in the entire IT industry. Her name is Robin Robbins, and she is the founder and CEO of Technology Marketing Toolkit. You know, even if you do just a little bit of research on the web about Robin, you'll discover that she has directly and positively impacted the lives and the businesses of thousands of MSPs, VARs, and IT services firms to help them attract more clients, to close more sales at higher profit margins without discounting or a lot of convincing. Now, I met Robin in 2005, over 10 years ago, just 3 years after she had founded her consulting practice in 2002. At that time, I was in the business of interviewing raving fan clients of consultants, digging much deeper than normal lightweight testimonials to find out specifically how that consultant was able to help their clients. Since Robin started her practice, she has helped over 8,000 IT services firms. And over the past 11 years, I have personally interviewed over 100 of her raving fan IT services clients about how they used Robin's products and services. I can tell you that after 30 years of interviewing raving fan customers of every sort of business for every kind of consultant, I have never found any in any field who consistently got hard dollar results for their customers like Robin has. Look, anyone can be good once in a while. I mean, somebody's going to love you, right? But to do this consistently over 14 years, well, that's extraordinary in my book. Robin currently runs the largest sales and marketing coaching program in the IT industry. And those clients range from brand new startups to MSPs who generate over $30 million plus in services year over year, which may explain why companies like Microsoft, Intel, and Google, Dato, Kaseya, and Continuum, eFolder, Sophos, and AdTrain, and dozens of other key vendors in the channel have hired her to coach, to speak to, and consult with their reseller partners. So please, get your minds and pens ready for one of the most insightful, life and income-changing presentations that you'll ever experience. So, without further ado, let's get Robin on the line. Robin, are you there?
Yep, here I am.
Great. Clearly, you have an amazing background and tremendous numbers of raving fan clients. But for those of you who don't know you as I do, can you start by explaining how you got where you are today?
Sure. And, you know, I want to say thanks for that introduction. That sounds, every time I hear myself being introduced, I kind of like have a moment of thinking back to when I had nothing and started with nothing. And then, you know, I hear this, and I think, like you, 8,000, and it's, you know, I just want to take a moment and say thank you for the great introduction and just, you know, how blessed I feel for what I have today. And yes, I work very hard to get it, but sometimes, you know, and I think this might be the first lesson that I can even impart to people, because, you know, the topic of this session is all about how do you double or triple the number of leads that you have in your business. And I'll give some very specific things that you can do and what I've learned over the years and whatnot. But sometimes it's just a matter of doing the right thing over a long period of time, you know, just being willing to put in the work and not doing start, stop, not getting all, you know, motivated by reading a bunch of books, tapes, seminars, and then doing nothing. I mean, you actually got to put in the work, and you got to put in the work over a long period of time. And, you know, I have found that anybody who is successful in business, that's really the quote-unquote secret. You know, it's just putting focus and attention to a result that you're trying to achieve, not randomly, not whenever you get in pain and need more cash or are unhappy, but, you know, consistently doing your 20-mile march, you know, to use Jim Collins' term, you know, and just getting up every day and doing those things. So anyway, I just wanted to say that as you were reading that introduction. I thought that was it just kind of occurred to me as I was listening here. So yeah, let me give a quick background of how I got where I am today, because it's a question I get a lot. And I'm not going to go way back, you know, in the time machine, but a couple of relevant things that people should probably know about me. And one is that I've been in sales my whole life. you know, another than a brief couple of months as a secretary back in my 20s, which didn't last very long because I quickly went into sales. I've always had to hunt my supper. And I think that's important because there are a lot of marketing people, marketing consultants, who couldn't sell fresh meat to starving wolves. I mean, I kid you not. It's amazing to me how inept there that some of the marketing people are. And part of it is because people who go into marketing often go into marketing because they don't want to be in sales, which is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You know, particularly for small business owners. Now, if someone's listening to this and you've got a marketing degree and you want to go work at IBM or some big company where marketing is not just about generating sales, it's about a million other things, that's fine. But in the small business world that I work with clients, and my clients range from startups to 30 million, 40 million. But in my world, when a client hires me for marketing, they want to get results. They want to get sales. And so I think it's important that the people listening to this know that I am a salesperson at heart. I know what it's like to cold call. I know what it's like to hit a quota. I know what it's like to make a payroll. I've got a, you know, I've got a big company today. We'll do about $12 million this year. And I've got staff, and I deal with the same challenges everybody deals with. But I think it's important that you know that I started my business from nothing. I was paying for groceries on credit cards. I'd just been stupid with money. I tried to start an agency marketing business, and it had failed miserably. So I'm not the golden child where everything I do turns to gold. So I've been in sales my whole life, and the more recent years where I was employed for somebody, I worked for a couple marketing agencies. And the last agency I worked for, I had already had in my mind that I wanted to go on my own and do something different because I had worked for a couple agencies, and I was starting to see that a lot of agencies really they're not about getting results for clients. They don't even understand marketing from the standpoint of marketing that drives sales, direct response marketing. And it was a frustration for me because I was in sales at the agency and a small business owner would come to me and say, hey, you know, I need to get more clients. I need more people to call my office. I need more people to, you know, fill seats or whatever, you know, seminar seats or training seats, or I need to sell more tickets. Or I mean, because I was working with a variety of different clients. And, you know, they were calling us to, how can you help me with this? And I'd say, you know, we can help you with this. And I was studying direct response marketing at the time. But the way the agency worked is as soon as I nailed that contract, we handed it over to a creative department. And the creative department in any agency, you can spot it. It's usually back in the corner. It's low light. There's all kinds of weird tchotchke stuff hanging all over the walls. You know, there's sometimes a little funny smell coming from that corner. I don't know. I think they're back there smoking some funny stuff to come up with creative ideas. And they all work on Macs, you know. They're just like their own little tribe. Now, these people are creative people. They have never sold a thing in their life. Okay, that's the key here. And so the agency and everyone you work with, they turn it over to the quote-unquote creative department and to a bunch of people who might know how to do graphic design and make things look pretty, but they don't have a clue as to what it takes to generate a lead for you. And, of course, the campaigns would fail. And, you know, I sell this over and over again. And I guess this was how I ended up getting pushed from the nest a little bit earlier because I knew I wanted to start my own thing. I knew I wanted to actually work with clients who understood how to generate leads and generate sales using marketing, using very strategic marketing combined with sales strategies. And anyway, I got fired from that agency a little bit sooner than I was ready to launch, if you will. So I didn't have any money, and I had to start out like all of you probably listening on the phone, you know, no two nickels to rub together. I didn't have a list. I didn't have marketing funds. In fact, even for my website, I had to barter work that I did for a web design company in order to get them to do my website. And so like I teach my clients, I had to figure out what is my niche. And I had a relationship with an organization, association in the IT industry called CompTIA, because in the agency business, I was doing work for companies like Surf Control and Novell and Intel. And so I wasn't a stranger to the IT services industry. Anyway, so CompTIA hires me to do a six-month sort of coaching program for their members. And out of that, I started to pick up one-on-one consulting clients. you know, at the time when I was doing this for CompTIA, I should tell you guys that I was doing work for all different kinds of companies. I had a medical billing company. I had a trucking shipping company as a client. I had a computer training school as a client. I had a company that sold like exam software as a client. So it was kind of all over the map. And then when I did this consulting agreement with CompTIA, I started picking up VARs as clients at the time. VAR was, MSP was not as in popularity as it is today. So they were VARs. And what I found was I really enjoyed working with the companies that were selling IT services. I guess I understand them. I get them. I know a lot of marketing people won't work with IT folks because they feel like, oh, they're very analytical and skeptical and they can't sell their way out of a brown paper bag or whatever. But, you know, I actually just kind of got along with them really well, and I respected what they did. I thought, I personally think IT services, you know, really are the unsung heroes of business. I mean, you talk to any business owner who hasn't been able to get their email in like 2 seconds and they're freaking out, right? So I really do think that they are the unsung heroes, and I was getting good results with them as well. So, you know, that's when I decided in 2002, I was like, you know, I made a decision that I was just going to focus exclusively on working with IT services companies. I liked them. I was getting good results. I had a background because I did work for CGI Systems for a while, which is a big, you know, IT services firm. So from there, those clients got me ASCII events. I started speaking at SMB Nation. There was System Builder Summit. I was doing work with NASBA. I spoke at the ConnectWise Summit. So I started sort of picking up speed, and I did exactly what I teach my clients to do, and that is to build. Okay, to build your business based on who is your customer, and then having a customer-centered business in the sense that, you know, everything we're about is helping these IT service companies, whether you're a startup or you're $1 million or you're $30 million, to specifically get them from where they are today to where they want to be, you know, obviously in leads and sales and revenue, profits, and so forth, and do it in the quickest, most efficient way possible. So that's kind of a short how I got to be where I am today.
So today, you have a multi-million-dollar business that you work from home, which is, I mean, that's the dream of a lot of entrepreneurs. How did you become an entrepreneur, get interested? Were your parents entrepreneurs?
Yeah, well, let me first say, I actually do have an office with employees. I just don't go there, okay? I find that they're happier that way. I'm happier that way. You know, but all kidding aside, no, we do I have an office, and you know, and we have a training room in the office, and we have clients who come in, but I do work from home, okay? And that's always been something that's important to me, and I think for any entrepreneur, I'm a very much a lifestyle-driven or lifestyle-first kind of entrepreneur, you know, in the sense that I think your business should be created to serve you, not the other way around, you know. And so it does make it more difficult, you know, in some respects, which just means I have to be a little bit more clever, a little bit smarter about how I run things, you know. But I have a belief, and this comes from a period of time I worked for Tony Robbins, and that is there's always a way. If you're dedicated and focused enough, you will find a way to get any result or goal that you want. The only difference is, are you really committed to getting it? So for me, I love working from home. I'm sort of like a hermit. I'm a big introvert. People don't realize that about me, but I am, which actually I think makes me a good marketer because I'm far more curious to listen to people and observe them than to be the center of, you know, of attention. And that's the truth. I mean, I speak on stage, but that's just a means to an end. It's not something that, you know, I wake up in the morning thrilled to do. I just do it because I have to. So I do have an office. And then as far as an example of an entrepreneur, you know, nothing could really be further from the truth. My parents, I'm one of five, have a very disjointed, dysfunctional childhood. And I'm not saying this to nobody should have any sympathy for me because, you know, a lot of people have it worse. But my mother belonged to a religious cult, and they believed that, you know, no medicine, wouldn't even take an aspirin. They didn't believe in storing wealth. Money was the root of all evil, so they wouldn't own their homes. They would never save up any money. If you found yourself with a little extra money, you didn't tuck it away, you gave it away. It was like that kind of mindset. So, you know, talk about a dysfunctional, you know, relationship with money, and, you know, being an entrepreneur is about making money. So that was kind of drilled into my head early on. And my parents divorced when I was 11 and a half, almost 12. and we were homeless for a while. My, you know, I can't believe I'm telling this story on a live interview, but, you know, I literally, my mother, my sister, and I had gone down to a little mini vacation. Some of the church folks that she belonged to invited us down for a weekend at the shore. We went down. She rented a car because she didn't own a car. And we came back, and all the locks were changed on the door with a note saying, sorry, you got to find someplace else to live. And that was my dad's way of getting my mother to divorce him. So we were homeless. Literally, at that moment, my mother had no money, no savings, no job. She had a rental car. She was an emotional wreck. Fortunately, some people took us in, and we hopped around a little bit. You know, it was not easy. But, you know, that's kind of how I got raised. And so when it came to graduating school, you know, I was raised in the church, so when they had their own school, because they don't believe in inoculations or medicine, so they have to have their own school, and it only goes to 10th grade. So I finished that, and so I didn't have a high school diploma, and I had to go to work. That was, like, the key thing, is my mother wouldn't work, so we had to eat. And so I went to work at an early age, and I think, you know, oddly enough, you know, as I tell you this, you know, I don't want you to think it was god-awful. I mean, when I got to be older, finally I was able to kind of break free of that cult. I mean, when you're a kid, you're 12 and your mother's there, I mean, you don't have any other, you know, that's all you know. You don't have any choice. But when I got older, I was able to break free, started to go work on my own. But my mother really did teach me about not being afraid to do whatever it takes to succeed or to work, as long as it was moral and ethical. That was, like, obviously really key. And she taught me about serving others and the importance of being a servant mind, and also about using your talents, that God gives you talents and you shouldn't hide it under a, you know, or bury them, as the biblical story is, but, you know, use them. So one job I had was as a secretary, and I got exposed to selling and sales, and I got a hold of some Zig Ziglar tapes, and, you know, I kind of stumbled into learning how to sell. You know, because when a kid, when you only have a GED, you've got no professional work background other than I was cleaning homes and working at a flower shop, and then I got this secretarial job at a frozen meat place. I mean, it was just nuts. But, you know, when you don't have that kind of skill, the only job really you can get is either manual labor, or you can get a really crappy telemarketing job, which is what I got. And that's how I learned to sell. But what was really amazing to me, I saw this telemarketing job as an opportunity that I could control my income, because to me that was amazing, that, okay, so I could work extra hours, and if I get commission, if I'm a little bit better, I can make more money. I mean, to me that was a huge opportunity. I was so grateful for the opportunity to that. Like today, you know, try and hire a telemarketer for appointment setting and pay them $10 an appointment, and try and find someone who's grateful to do that job. I mean, good luck, right? But at the time, to me, that was a huge opportunity, and I embraced it, and I learned it, and, you know, just kind of, I think through the years, I've learned to sell, and I learned that I was really good at it, and I liked that I could, you know, work harder than somebody and get rewarded for that in a commission, so that never scared me, and I guess that's kind of where I got my understanding of being an entrepreneur. And then when I got fired from the last agency, I sort of greatness thrust upon me, where I had to either swim or I was going to sink, you know, and that's kind of how I learned to be an entrepreneur.
It's real easy to look at you and say, well, she's just a natural born salesperson. She says she was born in sales. She did this forever. But I'm not that. I'm an IT guy. So what's the secret sauce that you've developed that you're able to pass on to these people who are clearly not made from the same stock? They weren't born salespeople. Okay. So what's the secret sauce? How have you been able to turn this into something that everybody can use?
Okay, well, I'm going to kind of like skip ahead to something I was going to talk about, which is mindset. Okay, so again, if people listening here, I know that they're thinking, okay, when are you going to get to the content? I want to learn how to double or triple leads, right? So I do want to focus on that, and we are going to talk about that. And part of that starts with your mindset. Okay, so, you know, if you want the technical answer, of how I've been able to do this is I'm a very focused researcher. My core belief, first of all, is marketing should do one thing and one thing only, and that's generate sales. And then everything I've created for my clients has all been very deep in research. I take a very scientific approach to marketing and selling. So, for example, when I created all the campaigns that I've created in the toolkit, it wasn't me just sitting there being creative. It was literally me getting on the phone with hundreds of buyers, like CEOs of my clients, like my MSP clients. I'd get on the phone with their clients who bought managed services, who bought their support, and I'd find out, like, you know, why, what was going on in your business? What were you unhappy about? What was the breaking point? How did you go, and when you decided you needed to outsource IT support, how did you go about that research? How many sites did you look at? When you called, who? How did you narrow it down to three to five? And I can tell you, most people narrow it down to three, and they interview three, and they pick one of the three. And you know, how did you pick those three? And why did you pick my client over the others? Were they the cheapest? Was it price based? Was it, you know, what was it based on? And where do you see the value? And I've done hundreds, countless hours of these interviews, and I continue to do them. I just interviewed about 35, 40 MSP clients for another project that I was researching. And, you know, what I do is I record those interviews and I transcribe them, and I literally sit with a highlighter and go through and find commonalities and how they describe it and what they say and what are their frustrations. And you see patterns. You see patterns of what customers look for and buy. But the other thing that I've done is working with literally, 8,000. I mean, over the years, we've had 8,000 customers buy the toolkit blueprint or some of my seminars or consulting or whatever it is. So you start to see patterns after that many. I mean, heck, you see a pattern if you look at a dozen. You start to see patterns in what works, what doesn't work. And that's how everything I've done is not, again, based on me being creative. I actually don't have a creative damn bone in my body. I'm all about looking for models, looking for patterns that are already successful and replicating it.
So what are some of the patterns you see in successful MSPs who are doing things to grow their businesses over and over again versus those that don't grow?
Okay, so like I mentioned a minute ago, is mindset. Okay, if their mindset's off, there is absolutely no marketing I'm going to give them. There's no template. There's no easy button. There's nothing. There's no website. There's no SEO. There's no Google. There's nothing I can give them that will make them be successful, because succeeding in business or generating leads, or really what they want is to close those sales, is a matrix of things that has to be right in order for them to succeed. So I say we have 8,000 clients. You know, I'm going to be totally transparent and tell you right now that not all of them are raving fans. We have approximately an 11% refund rate on our toolkit, right? And that's been like that for years. I mean, that number has not moved. In case you're wondering, like with our toolkit program, like when you buy it, you have up to 2 years to refund it. And no surprise, you know, most of the refunds come in around the holidays, you know, when people are looking for Christmas present money, I guess. But we have about that. And the number one reason people refund it is they say, I don't have time to do marketing, which is ridiculous. You're a business owner. You're an entrepreneur. If you can't bring in a customer profitably, if you have no marketing systems, no sales systems, and you're sitting there going, well, I don't have time for marketing, then you know what? You're not an entrepreneur. You are a hobbyist who has a job. That's what you have, because an entrepreneur is going to be always thinking about how do I bring in more customers quickly and profitably and grow this thing. And you can only grow this thing by bringing in more customers and more sales. But the mindset that a lot of people have in the industry is that they're, like you mentioned, Bill, they're very technical minded, operations minded. They're not sales driven or customer centered. So, you know, I know Robert Hirschebeck from Shark Tank. I've actually spent quite a bit of time with him and Kevin O'Leary, actually. I've had Kevin O'Leary here at my house, and we've had some discussions. So I know a lot about what goes on at Shark Tank, if you guys are Shark Tank fans and whatnot. And I, just in talking to them, I can tell you what companies they invest in and which ones they don't. One of the things they look for is the CEO sales-driven? Because if the CEO's not sales-driven, that thing's going to you know, peter out. If they happen to have stumbled upon a really good business idea, they're going to get that CEO, you know, to keep him, but they're going to go find somebody who's sales driven to run that thing, right? Because that's how it's going to grow. So that you got to have a sales driven person. And, you know, when you look at most IT companies, They are very operations or technician minded. And let me give you another analogy, if I will. So, like, if you look at a big business, you go in any big business, there's basically, you can break everything down into three departments. You can break it down sales and marketing, which is like the gas pedal, right? They're the selling, marketing, moving the company forward, right? Then you've got operations. And operations is like the manufacturing of the thing, which is the delivery, service delivery, onboarding clients, keeping clients, servicing clients. That's the operations. And then you've got the accounting department, which basically reports on the other two and is basically a scorecard of how healthy are we, where are we imbalanced, and so forth. Now, when a small business owner starts his business, you know, if we're talking the IT people out there, they are very heavy, heavy operations minded. So they know how to fix computers. They know how to install computers. They understand technology. They love technology, but they are not sales minded, right? And if you look at big companies, there's always a natural tension between the sales marketing department and the operations department, in the sense that sales and marketing always wants to promise faster, better, cheaper. You know, they'll hustle. They want to bring in more new customers. They don't want to slow down customer acquisition because that's how they get paid. But if you look at the operations team is like the brake pedal, right? They're like, hey, we can't, you want to promise what? You want to do what? We can't do that. You need to slow down. We can't service all these customers. You need to stop selling. And so you've got this gas pedal brake situation, and if you're going to move the car forward, you absolutely need a good brake. In fact, that's Nito Cobain once said to me, he said, do you know why cars have brakes? And I said, well, you know, sounds like so they can stop. I knew there was a better answer, but that's all I had. He said, no, it's so they can go fast. So it's not that you have, you know, you can't let sales and marketing run amok, but you can't drive a company forward with your foot on the brake. And most of the people in the channel, if you look at the IT industry, who are small and trying to get bigger, they're very operations minded. And so they want everything in a nice, neat, organized, linear path. They want to wake up every day and know exactly what's on their plate with no surprises. And, you know, growing a business isn't that. Growing a business is chaos. Your growth is disruptive. Every time you add a new product or service on, it's disruptive. Every time you add another client on, it's disruptive. And you continue to grow, and then you get to a point where you got to have managers of the people. You can't manage it all. You've got to start building a team. It's very chaotic. It's very fast-paced, and it's very disruptive. And that's why I think it's mindset. One of the biggest patterns I see is, you know, in order for someone to succeed, you have to be a sales-driven, customer-centered business, not operations or tech-minded. So that's one. The second thing, you got to be open-minded. You know, when I talk to some people about here's the marketing we're going to do, they instantly sit there in automatic dismissal mode. Oh, that won't work for me. No. My customers are different. You know, the people in, you know, middle of town Iowa, we're different. You know, we're more pragmatic. We would never respond to that. We would never buy from that. Like they have all these belief systems. They sit there in automatic dismissal mode instead of keeping an open mind and testing things. You know, I just had a client dig her heels in. I wanted her to try a pop-up on her site. And she, like, dug her heels in. Absolutely no way I'm going to do this. I hate pop-ups. My customers hate pop-ups. They won't work. You know, and I said to her, I said, look, test it. You know, I'm not saying it's going to transform your business, but it could be a breakthrough in getting your conversion up. But if you don't test it, you don't know. And so I finally convinced her to test it. Well, lo and behold, what do you know? The site conversion is looking like it's going to triple, right? And
Oh my gosh.
But it's again, it's simple things like that. Oh, I could never put a guarantee on my services. People will take advantage of me. It's these knee-jerk reactions. In marketing, you have to be a scientist and look at things and experiment and test new things. Look at Zappos, for example, right? Who in the world would have thought the best shoe store in the world is going to be online? And everyone would say, that could never work. People like to try on shoes. They like to, you know, to look at them and see how they look and feel before they're going to buy shoes. And they're crushing it. So there's all these belief systems that you got to let go of if you're going to be entrepreneurial, if you're going to have a breakthrough. So that's second. I think a lot of, you know, if you want to double or triple your leads, you got to be willing to test new things, and not things that you like, but things that you know, that in our proven marketing principles. And the other thing is they got to have, and I'll leave with this, is they have to have an honest ambition to grow. They can't look for an easy button. People come to me and they go, Robin, what's the one thing I need to do? Well, right away, I'm going to tell you, you're going to fail. If you're going to constantly look for simple, easy solutions to complicated problems, you will not succeed, okay? And you've got to have a realistic viewpoint about investing in growth, customer acquisition, both time and money. You got to be in it for the long haul. And the only way that that's going to happen is if you have a true, honest ambition to grow, not a, hey, we get to the end of the year and we look at our bank account and we're not happy. And so we decide we got to go do something, right? And so what's the one thing I need to do? See, that quick fix mentality, you'll never grow. And by the way, it's not just marketing, because that quick fix mentality shows up in everything they do. Well, what's the one thing I need to do to smooth out operations? Or what's the one vendor I need to hire that's going to make things all better around here operationally? Or what's the one thing I can do to find good people, right? There is no one thing. If you're not willing to put the work in and do tough things, you're not going to succeed.
So, folks, those of you listening, make sure, I asked you before, get out some paper and pens, something to write with, because now I'm going to get her to really dig in and tell us. So what are some of the steps, the specific steps that these guys need to do in order to make them successful? Can you kind of take us through the process?
Okay. So for those of you, if you're selling IT services, the first thing you got to realize and start with is a correct premise. And that is nobody needs what you sell. Now that sounds really hurtful. And I don't mean that in the sense that nobody needs IT support. Clearly they do. What I mean is the market is already saturated. There are dozens upon dozens of IT services companies. I mean, do a Google search. There's no shortage. So nobody's sitting around going, you know, geez, what we really need around here, man, is we need an IT services company. I mean, we really need that, right? And this is something I want you to write down, all of you, since Bill mentioned about a pen. Nobody is going to leave someone good for someone or something potentially better. All right, so no one is going to leave someone or something good for something potentially better. For most of you, if you're selling IT services, in most cases, not every, but in most cases, you're knocking out an incumbent provider. They're already outsourcing to somebody else, right? Well, in order for you to get that business, it is a zero-sum game. Somebody has to lose, that you have to knock out that incumbent provider. And that's the basis of what I call USP, unique selling proposition, and that is you have to be able to answer the question, why should I do business with you versus any and every other option available to me, which is something Dan Kennedy taught me, and any and every other option is doing nothing. So you've got to realize that if you go and you say, hey, we do IT support and we're proactive, and you know the business owner hears that, if he's got an IT person that they're happy with, or even if they're not super happy with them, if you look like that guy, you don't look any better, there's no point in me going through the pain and agony of disconnecting with my current vendor and trying someone new, because I have no idea if you're going to be any better. You could be worse. And if your marketing and advertising, it looks blasé, if you are not able to articulate why someone should do business with you over somebody else, then you're forever going to be shopped on price, and you really are going to be pushing a wet noodle uphill, right? So first of all, start with that premise, and your unique selling proposition, which I don't think I'm going to have time to get into. Like, I mean, I teach this in a day, so it's not a simple thing. But essentially, you know, it has to be able to – you look at who is your customer – and then you've got to develop that USP based on who your customer is, what their needs and wants are, where they're being underserved, and who your competition is. Okay, so that's number one. If you don't have that, everything else is going to be a lot tougher. Second, your marketing, you got to think systems and strategy, not random acts and desperation. And so when you're doing any kind of marketing lead generation, get out of, we're going to try this. Never say try, okay? So if you're going to say we're going to do Google AdWords, let's say, then don't say, well, we'll try Google AdWords. No, Google AdWords works. you've got to get in the mindset of, we are going to do Google AdWords, and we're going to add that on as what I call marketing oil well, which once you set it up in the systems and process are there, it produces over and over again with very little management, okay? That's the key. You got to get to that point where your systems and processes, and then you need to understand also lead generation marketing. I call it educational direct response because it's the shortest path to the sale. You don't want awareness to be the goal. You want leads to be the goal, okay? And then finally, you got to play the long game, like 3 to 5 years. You got to have that consistency in marketing, because if you're going to hop around like a grasshopper with hemorrhoids from trying this thing to this thing, to this, you're never going to get any – well, you don't get any traction. You never get anywhere. You just go along the way writing checks to like the – and then the next SEO company or the next web company or the next telemarketing firm that shows up and says, we'll get you appointments. You just pay us for appointments. And you just write checks all along the way, and you're never getting any process and systems in place, right? So you've got to make a commitment, number one, because if we're really going to truly double or triple the lead flow, we got to be in this for the long game. We can't just be trying things or it will not work.
So one of the key parts of your program is lead generation, because
right.
until you can attract people that are, you know, at least in the market to listen to you, you're just speaking into the wilderness. So what is a good lead generation campaign? What goes into it?
Okay, so lead generation marketing, let me explain what it is. It's essentially where you're getting a potential prospect to raise their hand and show some sort of shy interest, okay? Essentially, most marketing and advertising, if you look at it from most companies, is trying to bridge a gap that's way too far. So in other words, like a prospect has to be nearly ready or absolutely ready to buy what you sell in order to respond to the marketing and advertising you see most MSPs, VARs, IT service companies putting out there. Because it's most of it's like, we do IT services and they have a phone number. Oh boy, can't wait. You know, it's like, oh, call me, right? So a sales guy can jump on me. So, you know, we have to do what's called lead generation advertising, because prospects get ready to buy slowly over time usually. So they start thinking, you know, they get unhappy with their current IT provider, or they get unhappy, maybe they're trying to do their own IT support, and they're starting to come to the realization they need to do something different. Well, you know, if you're doing marketing and you send out a flyer, whatever it is, and that prospect sees that flyer, but there's no way to engage with you other than to call and speak to a salesperson, you know, to talk about putting together a proposal. If I'm not there yet, I'm not ready to buy that, then I won't respond. And then that flyer gets thrown away, and then maybe 3 months, 6 months later, when they are actively looking to buy and ready to buy then, they might not remember you, right? So lead generation marketing allows a prospect to engage with you when they are sort of in the realm of thinking about it, so that you can cultivate the relationship, you can move them closer to you, we can bring that latent dissatisfaction to a boil. If they know what they're doing in marketing, we can cultivate the need, we can move them through the process of buying, and we can educate them with our marketing as to what to look for when they're going to buy an IT, when they're outsourcing to an IT provider. That's called lead generation marketing, and it's all about list building and cultivating. It's like being a gardener, right? Because, like, Bill, you and I know, like, if we were gardeners, okay, you don't put the seed in the ground, water it, and stand there for 5 minutes, and if it doesn't sprout, you just walk away from it, right? That's not, no gardener does that. You know, what you need to do is you realize that, you know, if we have an apple tree in the backyard, we got to know that we've got to cultivate that tree. We've got to water it and prune it and make sure there's pests that stay away. And we've got to wait, because apples will start to form on the tree, but they're not all going to ripen at once. They ripen over time. And so you've got to collect your harvest over time. And that's really what marketing is, especially with IT services, because listen to this. Most companies don't switch IT providers but every 3 to 5 years. So if you are only doing the sporadic, desperate attempt, random acts of hope and desperation when you need sales, and you go out, that's like throwing the apple seed in the ground, watering it, fertilizing it maybe for a couple of days, and then you give up and abandon it. Well, we're never going to get anywhere. So there, but lead generation, so that's what lead generation is. And any marketing campaign you put out has got to have five basic parts right to work, to generate leads, to get the phone to ring, to get people who are prospects to kind of move towards you. And I'll give them quickly, and then I'll go in depth, okay? So number one is the list. Who are you targeting? Number two is the offer. What's the offer you're making them? Number three is the message and copy. Number four is the frequency and sequencing of the message. And then number five is the math. Okay, so the list. And this is like marketing 101. You got to decide who your customer is. And most IT firms, when I push them, they can't articulate this. They have a client list that's a mile wide and an inch deep. You know, and the other thing is they treat their list, they are not care and feeding for their list. So it's very common. I'll have somebody in my office. They've been in business for 10 years, 20 years. Well, I ask them, what kind of list do you have? They don't even have a list. So who are we going to sell to? They want to generate sales. I'm like, well, where's your list? They have no list. So, you know, the single most important asset in your business is your list of customers and the relationship you have with them and of prospects that you're cultivating, your garden, okay? Because no other list is going to be as responsive as your house list. So if you don't have a list, now we got to go out and we got to do cold prospecting, which is tough. And I've got ways of making it easier and faster and better. But number one, the list, okay? Now, I could spend a whole day on list building. And number two on that is selecting the most lucrative, responsive, target market customer you want, because your list or who you want as a customer defines your business. When you decide who you want as a customer, it's going to define how you package your services. It's going to define your price point. It's going to define your service offering. It's going to define the types of skills and people that you need to go find and hire. It will determine, are you selling to CEOs of hospitals and you're selling $500,000 to $1 million deals that don't come along very often, or are you selling to home users, where you get more deal flow coming in faster, but we got to have a lot more of it to make the model work. So it defines everything, and most people can't even articulate. They're customer to me. They just whoever comes in. And that's why they get a bunch of customers they don't like, and they don't know where to start with marketing, because it also defines where we go to market. Because if we're marketing to home users, we go and advertise and market in different places than if we're targeting the CEO of a hospital versus if we're targeting maybe small local banks, or we're going after construction companies. We talk to the CEO of a construction company different than we talk to the owner of a financial services firm. They care about different things. They have different language. They have different budgets. They have different decision-making processes. So again, that's where it starts, is the list, number one. Okay. Number two is the call to action. So we're going to put this marketing out there. And what is it that we want them to do? Again, this is having a call to action, CTA or an offer, is the opposite of what almost everybody does, right? So if you look at your marketing right now, whether it's your website, maybe you would go to networking events and you hand out business cards, or you're making telemarketing calls or emails, or whatever it is that you're doing. Basically, all marketing and advertising for most IT firms, it just states what they do. But it doesn't state it in terms of who they do it for or the benefit to that person. They basically say, we provide IT services and support, backup disaster recovery, security solutions, you know, cloud computing, cloud solutions, migrations, Office 365, whatever it is they do, right? So again, in order for someone to respond to that type of marketing, they need to have an immediate and urgent need. And they got to be also PS sold that you're the guy that they want to buy it from. So again, what we want to do is have some sort of offer. And my favorite type of content offer, my favorite offer is sort of some kind of educational content, whether it's a free report, a video, a webinar, or something. And the reason I say it's got to be an educational piece of content is because, first of all, I believe that an educated prospect should be your best customer if you're really good at what you do. And I think anybody who's out there who's lost sales to cheaper competitors that are not as competent, you would agree. If that prospect was more educated on knowing the difference between good and bad and actually knew the value of good, if they understood that, they would hire you. But they don't. They go with cheaper competitors. Well, that's your fail because you failed to impress upon them, first of all, your value proposition and why it's worth spending more. So that's on us as advertisers. That's not – customers aren't stupid. Customers just want the best deal, okay? And when you look like everybody else and you don't have any offers to engage people – they're going to go with the cheapest price. That's the only way they know how to make a decision. So we provide educational content. And that educational content, let's say, could be a free report of, you know, well, I just did a campaign for a client of mine who works with both small businesses and they work also with larger companies. And they sell that one of the big revenue generators for them is Office 365 migrations, and they sell it to IT directors of larger companies, you know, with 300 to 1,000 employees. And so our whole call to action was a free Office 365 migration plan to help you navigate this very visual and very important migration or decision in your business. If you're the IT director, moving everybody from on-premise servers to Office 365 is a big, hairy deal. And it could involve downtime. It could involve a lot of expenses. It could make you look like a big doofus. You know what I mean? No one's going to but, you know, if we come in as your consultant, as your guide, we will give you an Office 365 migration plan to show you where the biggest pitfalls are and how to do this successfully. And then, hey, if you like the plan, you can hire us and we'll do it for you. Very successful offer. I've got a couple clients who use similar who've generated literally millions of dollars. So the call to action is really clear. Bill, does that make sense? Because I know I'm going kind of quick here.
No, I think it makes sense. I think the thing that I see most often that happens is our IT service providers forget who they're writing for. That mm-hmm. they're not writing for the other IT people. They're not writing to people that understand that the value of bigger, faster, cheaper. They want to know basically something that's going to directly affect their business. So this next section that you're coming into about copy is so important.
Right. So that's the copy of the message. It's what you say that matters. And when I'm in a seminar setting, I'll hold up a $100 bill and a $1 bill, and I'll ask the audience, why is the $100 bill more valuable than this $1 bill? And, you know, people joke, well, because it's $100, you know, or whatever. And I'll say it's the same paper. It's the same size. It's the same ink. It's issued by the same person. It's essentially the same thing except for one thing, and that is the message printed on the paper. And they get it because web hosting costs the same whether you have an effective website or one that does nothing for you. Web design. You can have a web designer is going to get paid whether your website that he designs is actually producing leads or not. If you mail something, the post office doesn't charge you a surplus if your marketing, the direct mail letter that you sent out works better, and they don't give you a discount if it fails. You have to pay the same postage. Same with Google AdWords, or if you bought a spot at a trade show. So all these marketing costs essentially are the same, whether you actually convert it to a result or not. So, you know, businesses of all types and sizes write marketing communications all the time, websites, brochures, business cards, and they never study how to write an effective communication. And in fact, again, I'm talking about another guy who just came into my office the other day. He's a little bit larger of an MSP, but I've had the same situation with startups, right? He tells me he spent $35,000 on a website. And I said, well, how did you come to thinking that was a good idea? He said, well, we basically looked around at all the larger IT service firms that we wanted to be, and we paid this firm $35,000 to copy them. And guess what? It's not producing a single nickel in new business, right? And he's coming to me, and we're having to completely start over because there's no effective message. It looks very nice. It's well designed, but it's not producing results. So the only reason to have any marketing campaigns, literature, websites, is to communicate a message that is effective. And you're right, we have to communicate about what they care about. They don't care. They don't even understand what you do. So when you talk about managed services, by the way, we all know this in the industry. Go ask anybody who's in this industry, what is a managed services agreement? You ask 100 people, you'll get 100 different answers. So if we as a community can't even agree of what managed services is or what makes a good IT provider, how is a customer supposed to differentiate? They have no idea. So in your marketing, we have to identify with the conversation going on in the prospect's mind and build trust. What you guys are selling is trust, not IT services. Because again, I have no idea what you do, how you do it. I have no way of knowing if you're going to do a good job until I hire you in most cases. So the copy of how we articulate what we do and who we do it for is paramount, because it's going to make the difference of whether your website, your direct mail, your newsletters, your trade shows, your Google AdWords, doesn't all this stuff, right, can be completely ineffective, or it can be working like gangbusters. And it comes down to how are you communicating, not the media. See, everybody gets hung up, oh, I want to send email messages. Well, fantastic. And if you put a crappy message in an email, you're going to get a bunch of people ignoring you, blocking you, and opting out, and you're going to get no better results than if you take that same message and you put it in a telemarketing call, or you put it on a website, or you post it on Facebook, or you mail it out in the mail. An ineffective message is an ineffective message. So you have to have good copy in order for your campaigns to work, okay? And then after you get that right, which is the list, okay, we're talking about we have a good list, we have a good offer, we've got good copy, then the next one is frequency and sequencing, okay? And I like to tell a story. Muhammad Ali didn't become heavyweight champion of the world by punching one guy once. He became heavyweight champion of the world by punching a lot of guys multiple times until they fell over, right? And marketing cannot be made up of random acts. It's got to be systematized. It's got to be consistent. And, P.S., it's got to contain multiple media. Much to everybody's dismay who wants to only do online and digital, I'm telling you, it's a huge mistake. I can show you case studies, both personal in my company and in my client's company, that getting offline is critical to getting into certain accounts. I've got a client right now who's been relying on Google AdWords forever, and they've been doing really well with it. And in the last 8 months, it just started like getting more competitive, more expensive, and it just wasn't working as well. And he wasn't able to get his goals. So I said, guess what? Do we know who our customer is? He said, absolutely. I said, then we're not going to hope and wait until they go on Google and find you, where all your competitors are. We are going to start talking to them directly. So we built a list. We qualified it. We decided who we wanted as a customer. We got their name, their mailing address. We built this list. And then we started doing very specific targeted campaigns, direct mail to these people, because we didn't have their email address yet, because they didn't engage with us yet, right? Trying to get their email, of course, following up with phone calls, using LinkedIn, using other methods to talk directly to those people we wanted as customers, using that media with frequency, not random acts. And he's now getting 3 to 4 appointments a week. And we're talking, these are big accounts. These are people with 25 to up to 100 seats. The accounts that he was never getting in before because they weren't on Google. They weren't on Facebook. They weren't on LinkedIn looking for an IT provider. So we knew who we wanted as a customer. We put together a very compelling message and offer. And then we started targeting them with frequency. And the sequencing meaning we're touching them a minimum of once a quarter with some sort of offline. And in between, if we get their email, then using blog posts and email and so forth to do some drip marketing. Okay, so frequency and sequencing is key. And again, I'll just leave you with this, and that is you can't do random acts and expect to grow. It just isn't going to work. Okay, and then fifth and final is marketing math. Most IT firms think getting clients are free. And then again, in a seminar setting, I'll play with people. I'll say, how many of you know that you have to spend money on marketing to get clients? And, you know, hands will go up. I'll say, oh, yeah? I bet you don't think – I bet your actions prove different. And they'll laugh and they'll say – and I'll say, show me your spreadsheet that you put together to calculate what you have to charge a client to make a profit. Whether it's a spreadsheet, some QuickBooks, or, you know, a little calculator you've got, or a napkin. I don't care what it is, right? Show it to me. And then they'll show it, and I'll say, show me the line item for sales and marketing. And it's not in there. See, there's proof positive. You think getting customers is free because you're not incorporating those costs in your fees. Again, going back to Shark Tank, Kevin O'Leary and Hershevac won't invest in a company unless they know what the customer acquisition costs. If that CEO can't articulate what customer acquisition costs are and know how to sell, they're not going to invest, okay? And this goes back to even Hirschbeck saying CEO has to be a sales-driven CEO to be successful. I mean, Hirschbeck runs an IT services firm. He'll be the first guy to tell you that. So you have to have correct marketing math, all right? And the goal, most everybody makes this mistake, Bill. They all want to spend less. I want the cheapest marketing idea. You know, give me the cheapest thing you can do, all right? Well, the cheapest thing you do is work referrals. Great. Okay, so once you hit your rope's end on referrals, then what do? Well, I teach people how to use strategic partnerships, right? Okay, great. Then what do? Because, you know, every time people, you get to sort of the end of the rope of the whatever you can do with that, right? And everybody wants to do email. They want to tweet their way to getting in a contract and all this stuff. And my goal is not to spend as much as we can, but the goal is to be able to spend more to get a customer and make the math work, because that's going to give you a strategic competitive advantage. And Bill, let me give you an example, okay? Let's say you are working on a very thin budget, or you're just cheap and you don't want to spend money on marketing. So you're trying to do everything with email marketing. You're posting on Facebook. You're posting on LinkedIn. You're doing all the free stuff, right? Let's suppose I can afford to spend $500 to generate a lead, and I can spend up to $2,000, $3,000 to get a customer. Okay, I'm going to kick your ass every which way in marketing, because I'm going to be able to send a FedEx to the decision maker and have a very quality, high-trained salesperson follow up with that person, right? You're hoping that they're going to read your tweet. You know, I'm going to kick your butt every time. Is it more expensive? Yes. But it's almost like it's filter, because the smaller guys that are cheap about marketing, they either can't invest, or more accurately, they won't spend the money. They get emotional about the money, and instead of just incorporating it as a cost of doing business, they just, I would never spend that on marketing. You know, there's no need to spend that on marketing. And so they foolishly try and do cheap and easy, and that's why they never grow. So when you understand marketing math, you have to understand getting a customer is the most expensive thing you got to do. But then the other side of that is, and I teach my clients this, that's only step one. Once you get a customer, part of your marketing plan also needs to be, how do you develop that customer to monetize that customer and get the most out of them? Because when you know how to do that, you can get customers and bring them on at either break even or even maybe a loss. Because you can then monetize them on the back end, again, giving yourself a very strategic competitive advantage, because you're able to do more, invest more. You're able to go into direct mail or Google AdWords or other media that other people just can't afford to do, thereby giving you a competitive advantage.
Wow.
That's a lot, right? Yeah, I know.
Well, that's a lot, and I'm sitting here thinking, for people who are, you know, they're truly a marketing neophyte, I got to think they're sitting in the corner, you know, with a pillow over their head right now, thinking, how do I start? Where do I go? Do I get a marketing manager, a new salespeople, an SEO company? I mean, what do I do to get started and not be overwhelmed by all of this?
Well, I got news for you. Running a business, growing a business is overwhelming. It never suddenly gets easy, okay? So even if we get you started, you're going to run into the next thing and the next thing. So first of all, the goal should never be to make it simple, all right? But where do you start? Here's my encouragement for every single person listening, is get educated. Get educated about marketing. And I can't stress this enough, because if you want to grow your business, you're going to eventually need to hire people to help you. Marketing people, sales people, you're going to start writing checks for various different companies, whether it's buying a list or someone's going to help you with a website. You're going to start spending money. And if you don't know what good marketing is or how it should work, you're going to forever be writing checks, making mistakes, and you're going to end up abdicating and hoping rather than delegating. Okay, so when a business owner doesn't know what to do, they're like, well, let me just hire a salesperson who knows how to sell, and that way I can sit behind my desk and fix computers and run the operations, and they'll just fix that. They'll just bring me customers, right? Never happens. Or they just hire a marketing person, they're hiring somebody with no knowledge of what good marketing is. They can't even define what marketing's supposed to do. They have no way of defining success in marketing, and they just kind of put them in the role and they go, bring me leads, all right? And they end up, it doesn't work, and they fire people and it's a treadmill and they never grow. So even though I'm suggesting you don't have to do all the work, the one thing you got to do is you got to be educated. Listening to this interview obviously is a good first step, but I mean, we are brushing the dirt off the top. I'm just kind of whetting your appetite because there's a lot of things that go into this. But once you learn that, now you can hire people and manage people and delegate some of the responsibilities rather than abdicating control and abdicating responsibility and getting nowhere fast. So that would be number one. The toolkit, which is our flagship program, you know, let me tell you a little bit how it came about. And I mentioned it earlier on this call, and that is when I first started working in with IT services firms, I did all of my consulting one-on-one, you know, just get on with the client, create strategy, implement strategy. I would help them implement it. And I very quickly, my dance card filled up, and I knew I couldn't scale my business. And the other problem with that is that, as you might guess, I'm pretty intense, right? So I was constantly driving, we need to do this, then this, then this. And sometimes there was people, they'd keep up with me, they'd be ahead of me. But there were some people that just go at a little bit slower pace. And or sometimes they'd start out great and something would happen in their business. Like they would have a service manager quit on them, like a key employee, or they would get a massive big account. And they literally, you know, one client, you know, we were doing great, and then all of a sudden, part of the growth, he acquired another company, and he had to just focus on that. So sometimes those kinds of things happen, not necessarily negative things, but just things would happen. And so I knew I needed a better way of allowing an MSP or an IT services CEO go through this material and implement it at their own pace, and that's when I came up with the toolkit. And and the toolkit really is it's a step-by-step process to helping someone go from doing no marketing to how they really understand how to build sophisticated, very effective lead generation and sales funnels to bring those new clients on. But there's three components to it. And one component, really big, is the education part, because I want my customers to understand why I do what I do and understand the research I've done, because I think if you understand it, you're not just pulling a template and sending it, which you can do. That's the second component, is the templates. But if you understand why I'm doing it, you can make it better. You can implement it fuller, better. So the education is number one. Number two is, like I mentioned, the template. So I don't just teach you how to fish. I give you the fish. And we have, I mean, literally hundreds of templates, from telemarketing scripts to email campaigns, website copy, free reports, PowerPoint presentations, like seminar in a box, how to do that. I mean, you name it. We've got hundreds of those as examples. So when you're thinking about doing marketing, you don't have to sit down and look at a blank slate, which is the hardest thing to do. You pull a campaign that's already been proven and tested. And that's the other key thing, is the campaigns that I give my clients are ones that I've vetted. I mean, I've had other clients implement them. We've perfected them. And then I give them out there as templates. And so with a little tweaking, you know, because they got to tweak some of it. But with a little tweaking, it's kind of like Mad Libs. Was it Mad Libs? You know, you have the blanks, like you kind of fill in the blanks, so to speak. You know,
right.
And you come up with a, you know, insert a noun. You know, it's kind of like that to a certain extent. And then there's a lot of done campaigns from other members that have been posted that have worked and how they did it. And so there's that education, there's the templates, and then the third piece of it is support. And we have varying levels of support, from complete self-study, where you can call in and to conference calls that we have to get support from me and my team, or you can post to a very active member portal and get support, to where, you know, even like there's support we offer where you can come into an event with me and we spend 2 days and really nailing down your marketing and the fundamentals and kind of accelerate that process. So those are the three big components. But again, guys, you know, I'm telling you, education is the most important. Before you go hiring anybody or spending money on any marketing campaign, you got to know how to do it right, or you're just going to be wasting your money.
So if someone's listening to this and they're finally saying, all right, today's the day when I'm going to start doing something about this, if they're interested in working with you, what should they do next?
Well, I'd say go to technologymarketingtoolkit.com. Again, technologymarketingtoolkit.com. And up there, there's a lot of resources. So we've got free reports and videos. There's a blog that I have where we're very actively posting content and videos, obviously, because it's a video blog. And there's a lot of really good free stuff out there, so that way they can further their education. And then if you really want to take the next step, I'd suggest that you sign up for a one-on-one marketing consultation with my team. Now, I reserve the right because we're recording this. I don't know that I'll forever and ever do this. I mean, right now I don't have any plans of stopping it, but just for the record, you know, you go there and it's not offered, you know, tough nuts. You should have listened sooner or responded sooner. But right now, and you know, and again, I don't, for the foreseeable future, I don't see us stopping this, but you can sign up for a one-on-one marketing consultation, and we will, based on, you'll be asked to take a little survey, tell us about your company, and we'll get on the phone, and we will literally walk you through what are your goals, what are your resources, what are your plans. So that way, if you're a brand new startup, obviously you're going to have different goals and budgets and challenges than if you're a $30 million MSP. So that would be, you know, that would be my recommendation if you want to be really serious. And, you know, at the end of that, we will recommend some products and services that we have that could help you. And you can decide, hey, I want to move forward with that plan and what you've outlined for me, or maybe you don't. You know, maybe you just want to take what we've given you and say thanks, and you're going to go implement it. But, you know, that's what I'd suggest. You know, again, go up there, get involved with us. At a minimum, get on our mailing list, our email list, because we do a lot of educational content and videos, and you can get access to all of that by, again, going to technologymarketingtoolkit.com.
Robin, this has been a great interview, just filled with content, as all your stuff always is. Is there any last thing that you want to add?
No, I will add one other thing, and that is, if you are an IT business owner, when I say IT services business owner, you're CEO running one of those companies, I just want to say to you that you deserve to be rich. I have a lot of colleagues, friends that do marketing and business consulting for all different kinds of businesses, from CPAs to attorneys, banks, restaurant owners, you know, and carpet cleaners. I mean, you name it. Like, it runs the gamut. And the thing is, guys, you know, if you're listening to this, your business is one of the toughest businesses to be in, because technology is forever changing. It's not complicated. It's complex. And there is so much riding on the line where, you know, if you screw up one little thing, it could be disastrous for a client. So that puts an incredible amount of responsibility on your plate. And then you got to hire good people because keep them up to speed. And it's not a cheap or easy business to run. I mean, you literally got to get everything right. So I just want you guys to know, whether you're a client of mine or you ever do business with me or not, my hat's off to you. You really have a tough business, and I applaud you. I think you are, again, an unsung hero of the business world, and I think you deserve to be rich. And I'm going to do everything I can, if you become a client of mine, to make that a reality, not by scamming people or, you know, doing stupid things like that. That's not it. But you add value by mostly helping you recognize the value that you bring and giving you the confidence to demand it.
That's great, Robin. I thank you so much for being on this call today. And my hope for all of the people listening is that whatever you do, take action, and take action now. Don't wait. This is something you can't afford to pass up. Thanks a lot, Robin.
Thank you.